In today's episode, I interview Natalie Sampson, a board-certified genetic counselor who approaches genetic testing a little differently than your average genetic counselor. We talk about preconception testing, carrier testing, and how impactful that may be along your fertility journey. I share the pivotal moment in my husband and I's fertility journey where we finally did carrier testing and it explained so much. We discuss the benefits of genetic testing to reduce risk of developing conditions or diseases, if miscarriage is genetic, and the role our diet and lifestyle plays in our genes. We talk about why getting your genes tested with big companies like Ancestry or 23andMe may not be the wisest option, and so much more. Let's dive right in. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. I have the pleasure of interviewing Natalie today. Natalie is a dedicated board-certified genetic counselor devoted to transforming healthcare through personalized, integrative, and preventative approaches. She obtained her master's degree in genetics and genetic counseling at Keck Graduate Institute. After earning her degree, she contributed to a precision medicine team at a well-known hospital specializing in cancer and neurology. She then established Golden Genetics to introduce an integrative approach to genetic counseling and testing, combining it with nutrition and nutrigenomics. Her aim is to provide personalized care in genetic counseling and testing. Thank you so much for being here, Natalie. I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here as well.
I feel like this is a very needed conversation, even though people might not realize that they need the conversation, because I don't think genetics is something a lot of people think of off the bat, but is so important for our health journey. And I'm just stoked to interview you today.
Definitely. I know. I think, we face this challenge everywhere where people don't know about genetics and that it's an option. So I'm excited to hopefully provide some information.
Great. So I know that you do a lot of different testing in your practice, but we talk a lot about fertility on this podcast, and you do something called carrier screening. Can you explain what carrier screening is and why it's important for couples planning to start a family?
Yes. So carrier screening is a specific type of genetic test that looks at whether or not you're a carrier of specific inherited, usually recessive conditions. And so this means that even though parents may not show any symptoms of a disorder or condition, there's still a chance that they can pass down something we call a mutation, which is basically just a harmful change in a gene to their children. And recessive inheritance basically means that you need two non-working copies or two mutations in a gene to express that condition or to have that condition. And so, we basically inherit two copies of each gene, one from our mom, one from our dad. So when you're a carrier, it means that you have a change in one copy of that, of a gene. And so that doesn't mean you necessarily have the condition, but it does mean there's a chance to pass it down if your partner also carries that mutation. So carrier screening is really important when you're considering starting a family, because it helps us understand, you know, the potential risk to pass a condition or disorder down to your child, which, and we can talk about this more later, but we sometimes also see that we can get other insights from that too. And also I always like to mention, you know, some patients tell me I'm going to have the child regardless of what comes up. And so why would I do carrier screening? But I think it's important to also know that knowing if a condition will be present for the child, we can then plan ahead even after birth, mm-hmm. which can be really important and sometimes essential for survival.
Wow, that's amazing. So we learned about genetics in school, but not to the level that you guys do. And we ended up doing carrier testing in prep for IVF, because they really recommend it before you go through IVF. For anyone who doesn't know our fertility story, we had to do IVF. And it was in doing carrier testing. So sometimes people say, well, just test one of you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any mutations, the other person doesn't need to be tested. And I'm curious what you would say to that, because in our situation, it actually ended up that I'm so grateful that we tested both of us, because I did my carrier testing and I didn't expect to have any recessive genes, but I did. I had a few. And once I had a few, then we said, okay, well, now we need to test my husband to make sure he doesn't have the same ones, right? So it's that if I have one recessive and he has the same one, that we could pass on the disease to a child, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
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 So we ended up testing Mike, my husband, to make sure he didn't have the same ones as me. And he didn't have the same ones as me, but he had a recessive cystic fibrosis associated disorders mutation, which at the end of our 5 years of trying to figure out what was going on with his fertility was a huge answer to some of our questions as to why his sperm count was so low. Can you kind of speak to this? Yeah. And this is just an example, a real life example, I think, for someone through understanding what carrier screening is and the impact that it could have on understanding what's going on with your fertility or your life. Can you speak to that?
Totally. Yeah. And this is definitely an example of, I actually usually recommend both partners doing testing, because mm-hmm. when we're thinking about infertility, there are genetic components for both partners. So regarding carrier screening, I always recommend both, because we can find things out, like, you know, your experience. So like you mentioned, so cystic fibrosis is usually considered a recessive condition, meaning when you have two non-working copies, you can have the condition and all the symptoms associated with that. And cystic fibrosis is usually can lead to the body producing thick mucus, which can clog lungs and the pancreas and other areas, which can lead to those problems. So being a carrier for that condition has been shown in research to lead to some symptoms like your husband experienced. So this can lead to, you know, absence of the vas deferens and mm-hmm. also something called pancreatitis. And pancreatitis is basically inflammation of the pancreas. And so chronic pancreatitis can actually lead to pancreatic cancer. So we actually test for this when people have family history of pancreatic cancer too. But going back to...
Oh, wow.
But going back to being a carrier and, symptoms can come up, like absence of the vas deferens, which basically means the tubes that carry sperm from the testes to the urethra are missing or blocked, which can lead, you know, to infertility and in this sense, male infertility. So, with genetic testing, with carrier screening, you know, that just highlights why it's important to test both parents. And like I mentioned before, also, we can find out sometimes being a carrier can lead to other symptoms. So it actually can give us insight into something else that we weren't thinking about, but you may be experiencing symptoms for and had never thought about testing for that. There are other genetic tests that we can do too when we're thinking about male fertility. So for example, there's a condition called Klinefelter syndrome, which is mm-hmm. when males are born with an extra X chromosome. And so when we think about, back to basic genetics, there are two chromosomes that determine sex. And so X and Y. And so normally men have XY, women have XX. So sometimes men can be born with an extra X chromosome, so XXY, and this can lead to male infertility. There are other genetic tests that we can do, but, you know, it just highlights to why genetic testing in general is so important when we're when we're facing infertility.
Wow, that's so fascinating. So yeah, I think I just want to re-summarize for everybody that with carrier screening, like you said, typically we think the mom and the dad both have to have an issue with the gene in order for the disease to manifest in the child. But in this situation, just being a single carrier of one recessive gene, as was the case with my husband, can lead to issues in their body without it having anything to do with your other partner. And so genetic testing like this, I mean, I wish that we had seen a genetic counselor at the very beginning of our fertility journey. I didn't understand at the time that his severe low sperm count was an indication that there was something like this going on. And any of the fertility doctors we saw never alluded to it. which blows my mind. And just how much heartache and effort and money and time we would have saved if we had just done carrier screening early on. So I a big reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because this is so near and dear to my heart, in that it was something even I as a doctor didn't understand, and how valuable genetic counseling can be. So yeah, I just really want to like highlight that and give a huge shout out to you and what you do, especially in the fertility space.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And something you mentioned too that is important is it's not only about the genetic testing, but seeing a genetic counselor can be essential because the interpretation of the results is really confusing as well, right? Yeah. So like you mentioned, you know, seeing a genetic counselor and doing the genetic testing in that way can be incredibly valuable on your, you know, on your journey to start a family. So thank you for
I love that. Yay. Yeah. So how does carrier screening differ from other types of genetic testing?
Yeah. So carrier screening is, you know, again, kind of looking at genes that could lead to conditions that are more associated with recessive conditions. But there are genetic tests that we often do, especially in my practice, where we're not looking to see if you could or if you will have a condition. There are some genetic tests that show if you could be at predisposed of developing a condition or at risk of developing a condition. So we oftentimes focus on conditions like cancer, Alzheimer's or dementia, and heart disease. And there are genetic components to these conditions or diseases that we can test for. And genetics in these cases normally does not mean that these are your destiny. Really, the goal is to understand, do you have a predisposition and can we be proactive and preventative with this knowledge? So in our practice too, we also incorporate nutrition and lifestyle into that proactive and preventative plan. But really understanding, you know, your genetics and understanding, it's kind of like seeing a telescope, which is basically, you know, knowledge is power in that sense. And we can use that information to our benefit. So that's, you know, kind of this other type of genetic testing. And there's a whole host of other specialties and other genetic tests, but we focus on adult genetic testing too. So, and again, that differs than carrier screening, because normally those conditions, you only need one non-working copy. So we, you know, it's more of an autosomal dominant condition or inheritance pattern.
Okay. That makes sense. So from a practical perspective, as you're talking about general adult genetic testing, this is something that just comes up for me. You know, on this podcast, we talk a lot about fertility and motherhood. And I think we forget sometimes that yes, it's important to be healthy enough to conceive and carry a baby and birth a baby and be a mother. But then we forget that, okay, motherhood and adulthood continues and you want to maintain your health and be healthy so that you don't develop these conditions. And the thing that comes to my mind, which actually makes me want to cry, is I have a lot of Alzheimer's in my family. And I know that there are certain genetics that you can test to see if you have a genetic predisposition. Is this more of a lifestyle thing that has happened to the people in my family? And what can I do potentially to prevent developing Alzheimer's? Because, you know, you can work so hard your whole life to have these children and be, you know, their mother. And to me, the saddest thing would be to lose your mind and not know anybody in your life. So it's stuff like that where genetic counseling and testing can come in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so part of our genetic counseling program is literally psychology. So we can understand how to communicate this information, because it can be hard to talk about, you know, a potential risk of it being diagnosed with something you're seeing firsthand in your family. But I think, you know, with what we want to do, or what I'm trying to do in my practice, is also being able to reframe that as feeling empowered with this knowledge and knowing, like you said, there are things to do about it. And there is a lot of research showing, you know, what things we can do about it. Beyond that too, it can help us make sure that we're up to date on any, you know, research going on to be even more preventative and proactive. But, you know, I would say that we always talk about this with our patients before testing. So we're not going to test you if you're not ready to, you know, hear those risks. But I will say that a lot of patients that I've had regret or are frustrated that they weren't offered this test before a diagnosis. So, yeah, like you mentioned, this gives us the ability to really, you know, what we want to, what I try to also talk about is health span, not just longevity. So being able to run and play around with our kids and our grandkids, like you had mentioned, well into our life, you know, rather than experiencing disease and living our, you know, last 10 years of our lives in, you know, in that disease condition. So with genetic testing, we have that ability to work on both health span and lifespan.
I love that. Yeah. Like now knowing that Mike has the cystic fibrosis carrier gene and that it could affect his pancreas, I'm going to be a lot more aware of if he has signs or symptoms of pancreas issues or how do we support him with diet and lifestyle to prevent something like a pancreatic cancer. So I'm really stoked that we did that testing and that we know that now. How do you integrate lifestyle and nutrition and family history into your assessment for genetic testing?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So family history is very important for us geneticists. We love taking pedigrees, which is basically like a family tree. And this helps us understand what genetic tests we should be looking at for you. Because like I mentioned, there are so many out there. And unfortunately, we really don't have one good genetic test that tests for everything. We have over 20,000 genes in our bodies. And we have so many genetic changes that our technology just isn't efficient and cannot detect every change. So we have to pick what genetic test we choose for that patient based on goals. And a huge thing is family history. So the family history helps us understand what genetic tests we want to order. And it also helps us understand what could be going on in terms of inheritance. Because when we see something on the pedigree, just because there's a condition that is looking like there's a, you know, there's a lot on one side of the family and being passed down in generations, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have inherited it. So we look to see where it may have stopped in generations. So we love taking family history and incorporating that in. And in terms of nutrition and lifestyle, so one piece of it is that if we do identify that you could be at increased risk of something, we use nutrition and lifestyle in our practice to incorporate into that preventative and proactive planning. Because again, there's so much research out there that can, you know, help us understand how to reduce those risks in terms of nutrition and lifestyle. But the other piece of it is there is this test that we run called nutrigenomics or nutrigenetics. And this is somewhat of a newer test. But we're with this test, we're really looking at how our genes are responding to our environment. So what we eat and our lifestyle, and also how our lifestyle and environment is incorporated into our genetic makeup. So it's nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics has expanded beyond just how nutrition affects us. It's also other types of environmental factors. So we can look at a ton of different things. And that includes, you know, like methylation, oxidative stress, inflammation, detoxification, like cellular pathways. So we can really kind of combine different this test with other types of tests and use that information.
Wow. So is an example of that something like you can test certain genes that I have and see if I'm good or bad at detoxing, let's say, or like if I can't handle certain chemicals, or maybe I don't do very well at making vitamin D or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And so sometimes we do recommend, you know, using this information, and this can guide us into what blood tests or what follow-up we can do to assess, you know, if any of, you know, what we haven't looked at, if we haven't looked at something, we can see, you know, is there a nutrient deficiency here, or, you know, what is your bone health looking like, things like that. But like you mentioned with the detox pathway, I actually often talk about that because we have genes in our pathway that, like you said, some people are better at detoxing than others. And so what I noticed with my patients is there's a family, let's say two sisters, and they both they both grew up living on a farm, and they were exposed to pesticides their whole lives. And one developed cancer and one didn't. So when we test their detox pathways, it usually turns out that one actually has a very functional detoxification pathway, and the other has genes contributing to having, you know, a less of an ability to detox toxins out of the body. And so we can see why, you know, maybe someone would develop cancer and their sister wouldn't through that. And so with people who have less of an ability to detox toxins and environmental, other environmental triggers, then we can recommend, you know, a detox protocol to help their body remove those toxins, or, you know, obviously work on that with their provider. So yeah, really interesting.
Oh, I love that. That's so helpful. So again, and I don't know genetics like you do, but there are certain things that I've learned throughout my process. And this is probably what you're speaking about somewhat, like the enzyme COMT. Is something that is probably tested for. Is that something you test for?
Yeah exactly. Which yeah. also, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so I just know based on testing I've done that I don't have good COMT genes, or they're faulty, or they have a SNP or whatever. And my grandma had breast cancer, and I bet if we tested her, she has a COMT issue as well. And I don't detox well, and I know COMT is involved with detoxing, and especially estrogen. So for me, for example, this is just an example of like a real life situation. I know that I have COMT issues. I have a homozygous, so both of my genes, right, are messed up. Mm-hmm. And I do everything I can to prevent potentially developing breast cancer. So I'm much more proactive about supporting estrogen detox and doing thermal scans of my breast to make sure that I'm not developing anything. Whereas if I didn't have that information or knowledge, I maybe would just go through my whole life and not prioritize that. And, you know, maybe there is a world where I could prevent developing breast cancer because I have that information. So I'm just using my own real life examples to highlight what you're talking about, which is so helpful.
Totally. Yeah. And you mentioned a couple of things there too. So one thing I like to differentiate as well is when we're thinking about cancer specifically, there are certain genes that we test for as well, which are more, we say, you know, we kind of split these different test types. We say medical or clinical testing, which oftentimes genetics or genetic counselors test patients in the hospital for these genes, which are genes associated with tumor suppressing, so tumor suppressor genes. Mm. So they basically inhibit tumor growth in our bodies. So what can happen is if there's a mutation in one of these genes and we don't have the ability to inhibit tumor growth, then you're at increased risk. And so those are genes that you may have heard of. A lot of people have heard of like the BRCA genes, BRCA1 and 2. But there are a ton of genes that we test for. There's actually 79 that we test for in a panel. So we're looking at those genes. And then what I do in my practice is I can combine that information with the nutrigenomics or nutrigenetics SNP-based testing. So we look at the whole picture. We're looking at, you know, what is your detoxification, methylation, oxidative stress, et cetera, looking like? And we also look at how are your tumor suppressor genes work, you know, how are they looking? And combine that information to really define your risk even further. And also, like you mentioned, really define how we can be proactive and preventative and personalize that as much as we can. So, we, you know, I always like to mention that there are different types of tests, and with COMT, like you mentioned too, you know, there's in that pathway, we can look at a lot of different things as well. So yeah, exactly. Wow. Like you said, the goal is to get ahead of it with that.
Yeah. So what you're kind of talking about is there's kind of conventional genetic testing and then maybe more functional genetic testing, because I know a lot of people who have breast cancer that have a negative BRCA gene. And I think there's this weird, I don't know, misunderstanding that has spread into our culture that if you have a negative BRCA gene that you'll never develop breast cancer, which isn't true because there's so many other factors involved. And so I think that's helpful for people to understand that there's a lot more that you can test at and look at and support yourself with outside of just maybe one or two different tests.
Exactly. Yeah. And I will say that this more functional, we say SNP-based testing, which stands for single nucleotide polymorphism. It's a mouthful, but it basically means the type of change that we're looking for in the genes themselves. So this type of testing, you know, it's really important to make sure you're doing this type of testing with good quality and accurate labs, because this is the type of testing that actually did blow up becoming direct-to-consumer testing. So a lot of people can order this test on their own without someone to help them understand the result. But I will say that, you know, we, in our practice, we have a very trustworthy lab we use. And it's just important to remember that, because there is risk of doing that type of testing and getting inaccurate results, which unfortunately I've seen. But yes, like you mentioned, when I was working at the hospital, I was seeing patients who were diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age, but they were negative for the BRCA genes and all the other tumor suppressor genes. And so we were like, well, I guess we don't know why, but really we can actually test for this other, you know, we can use this other type of genetic test and usually clarify what was happening and what, you know, what we can do about it to prevent recurrence and any cancers moving forward. Again, I want to disclaim, cancer can happen sporadically and randomly. So we can, you know, it's never that we can promise 100% prevention, but we can get an idea of how to personalize that plan and be proactive and preventative.
Wow, that's amazing. I love that.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Did you know that 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed, because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal, because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy. So no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
So let's circle back to preconception genetic testing. So for a family or a couple or whatever that's thinking about having kids or doing that, are there ways that preconception genetic counseling can be helpful? Like, is this something that a couple should do? Should they come see a genetic counselor? And what kind of things would they be doing? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So preconception genetic counseling, I definitely recommend. And I think that unfortunately what ends up happening is women usually get the genetic testing done when they're already pregnant, which can actually lead to them having less options and, you know, kind of less guidance overall. So preconception genetic counseling can really empower couples with providing them with knowledge and options. And understanding genetic risks really allow for, you know, informed decision-making just overall, you know, ways that they can proceed the best way with planning their family. So I highly recommend seeing a genetic counselor for preconception genetic counseling, even before pregnancy.
I love that. Are there any genes that a woman could test that would tell them if they're going to have issues with fertility, or that might suggest issues with like PCOS or endometriosis or fibroids or anything like that?
Yeah, good question. So there are definitely genetic conditions that lead to female infertility that we can test for. So one condition that's often tested for is something called Fragile X syndrome. So this is a genetic condition that's connected to the X chromosome. And women who have this condition can have something called premature ovarian failure. So this is when a woman's ovaries stop functioning. And there are other symptoms that when this is something called a repeat expansion disorder, which basically can lead to this condition getting worse throughout generations. So when someone has a full-blown version of this condition, this can lead to things like cognitive impairment and behavioral changes. But before that happens, individuals in higher generations can just show symptoms such as premature ovarian failure. So we can test for this. And so that's one condition. Another one that we consider that's also chromosomal is something called Turner syndrome, which is basically where a woman has one X chromosome, and this can lead to premature ovarian failure as well. And there are other genetic conditions that we'll test for, which again is differentiated than the second part of your question, which is we know, like you mentioned, conditions like PCOS and endometriosis, fibroids, and polyps can impact fertility. These conditions do have genetic factors that we've also identified. However, there isn't one gene that we've identified that causes these. So it's a little bit more complex. It's really about assessing how genetic factors are related and environmental and kind of like epigenetics are, kind of more at play with those conditions. But the other thing is that we know genetics can relate to things like insulin resistance, hormonal imbalance, inflammation. So sometimes our genetics for those types of pathways can help us understand the root of what could be going on, or help us understand if we should be looking more into PCOS, endometriosis, et cetera.
Oh, that's amazing. So it's more, it makes sense. It's not a disease, quote unquote, gene that's so obvious, like a Turner syndrome, but it is a functional imbalance that leads to these functional, imbalances like PCOS and endometriosis and fibroids. And that's so helpful. I think that everyone should be doing this. So another thing that comes up a lot around genetics in the fertility space is miscarriage. Can you speak a little bit to that? Is miscarriage genetic? What are the factors in that?
Totally. Yeah. So there, a huge portion of miscarriages are due to genetic problems that occur in embryo. So this is most often chromosomal problems. So an extra or missing chromosome. And this doesn't necessarily mean inherited. So inherited means that it's being passed down in generations. But what can happen in miscarriages is a random event. So, and the chance for these random events to occur actually increases with maternal age, which is why there's this idea of advanced maternal age. It's not that it jumps up right after 35, it slowly increases with advanced maternal age. But what that means is the embryo itself, so this is after fertilization, there is a chromosomal abnormality which can cause a miscarriage. But miscarriages can have an inherited genetic component, meaning something is going on in the parents that is increasing the chance of miscarriage to occur. And normally we think about this genetic component when there is two or more miscarriages. But I still recommend this testing. What we can do is we can actually look at the genetics of the parents to see if there's something contributing. So the first thing we often do is something called karyotyping. And we karyotype embryos to see if there's a chromosomal abnormality that happened after fertilization. But it's important to remember that we can karyotype the parents, because what can happen is there can be actual misspellings or issues with the parents' chromosomes that can lead to recurrent miscarriages when they combine. So something that's a little bit confusing is something called a translocation. So this is where a woman, let's say, or, someone in one person in the partnership has their two chromosomes, but one of their chromosomes, for instance, may be flipped. So even though the genetic material is all there and it's not leading to any issues, when that chromosome combines with their partner's and meiosis happens, it can lead to a miscarriage because there's chromosomal defects with that. So we always want to see, what could be going on with the parents' chromosomes. And then again, also there are single gene, we say, instead of chromosomal, there are single gene disorders that can contribute. So like cystic fibrosis, for instance, or sickle cell disease. There are also thrombophilias, which can lead to blood clotting disorders like factor V, a lot of people have heard of, and this can lead to development of blood clots, which can lead to miscarriage. So there are a lot of genetic components that we want to consider with miscarriage and test the parents, not just the embryo.
Oh my gosh, that I feel like you're clearing so much up for so many people, myself included. Mm-hmm. And I actually just saw a patient today and she had karyotyping done on herself, but they didn't test the husband. And in that situation, that's not very helpful, right? You need to test both partners.
Yeah, both partners should be tested.
Of course, the man is always forgotten about everything. So frustrating.
I know. I was going to mention too, with that, you know, we always talk about advanced maternal age with genetics, but it's also important that to recognize there are some genetic conditions that the risk increases with older males as well, or, you know, older sperm, we say. So just something to remember too, it's not talked about either. We usually only talk about AMA or advanced maternal age. So anyways, that's something that's reviewed too in genetic counseling.
Oh, I love that. So I feel like a lot of people have questions, concerns, thoughts about genetic testing in regards to ethical and privacy considerations. I know there was a huge boom, like you mentioned, with people doing their own genetic testing through 23andMe and Ancestry.com and all of these things, and not knowing where that information was being sold or given. And can you kind of speak a little bit to that and just what are some of the things to keep in mind?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think there's misconceptions with this because when genetic testing became available for people to do themselves without having a practitioner involved, you know, these direct-to-consumer, we say DTC companies, came out to offer this genetic testing. And we think of Ancestry that kind of created more awareness around genetic testing. But the problem with that is now these tests are offering health insights and they don't have the same protection like HIPAA, even, you know, things, basic protection that we have in healthcare. They don't have that protection that we have when we do health and medical testing. And so there was, you know, there has been, you know, data leaks on the news and 23andMe selling data to outside companies, things like that. So I want to clarify in my practice and what we as genetic counselors do when we're testing is we adhere to strict protocols to protect patient privacy and confidentiality, especially with genetic information. And so the labs we use, for instance, you know, never sell data to outside companies. They de-identify the data, which means your name is removed off the sample. The sample is destroyed after we have your results. So there are a lot more protection than if you go to do, you know, testing on yourself through other labs that may not have that protection. I'm not saying all labs don't have protection, but many don't. For instance, like 23andMe, you know, there is that issue of giving data to outside companies and also law enforcement, which is why there has been on the news, like we found a murder through 23andMe data, but with that, you know, it can lead to issues with privacy. And then something I always like to talk about too, that not many people know about, is there was a law that passed in 2008. It's called GINA. It stands for Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. And this protects you against health insurance and employers from using your genetic information against you. So your insurance can't say,
I did not know that.
Yeah, your insurance can't say, you know, you're predisposed to something, we'll change your plan. So that's illegal. there are certain states that have partial protection for life insurance, long-term care, and disability insurance. So it's always important to talk about that with your genetic counselor or practitioner who's working with you on the genetic tests. But, you know, not a lot of people know we do have that protection in place.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. A insurance company or a life insurance plan getting a hold of your genetics and denying you coverage.
Yeah.
Whoa, thank goodness people were thinking ahead. I mean, this is just the benefit of working with a genetic counselor, like you said, because I would love to do more genetic testing, but I wouldn't do a direct-to-consumer genetic test anymore because of what's happened with some of those companies. So working with someone like you gives such peace of mind that it will be safe and you can gather this information without some unknown force taking your information and using it somehow. So that's so helpful. This has been so, so helpful. Is there anything that we haven't chatted about that you want to share that you feel like anyone listening should really know and really understand about genetics before we wrap up?
The biggest thing I just want to say is, you know, if anyone has questions about how to get genetic testing or see a genetic counselor, you know, I'm here, I'm available. Definitely let me know. I also, you know, of course, see patients virtually, so can always help. And the other thing I do want to say is that in terms of cost, a lot of people think that genetic testing is thousands and thousands of dollars, but sometimes we can actually use insurance to cover the testing, and usually it's under $1,000. So that's just something to keep in mind. And, you know, it's, I think, more affordable than oftentimes I hear people think it is. So, you know, just something to keep in mind, and definitely, you know, go look into it.
And I just wanted to bring up, can you just speak briefly before we wrap up the difference that you are based on maybe a conventional genetic counselor? You know, you've talked a lot about nutrigenomics and lifestyle and diet. Is that something that all genetic counselors do, or is that more unique to you and the practice that you have?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So I did start this practice because I didn't see anyone doing this, and I knew it was a need. So other, you know, in our traditional space, normally nutrigenomics and pathway type testing is not offered, nor unfortunately is the conversation of nutrition and lifestyle to, you know, incorporated in ways to either handle risk or, you know, for family planning, really anything. And so my practice is I incorporate nutrition and lifestyle, nutrigenomics, and I also offer, I would say, much more support than what is most offered in traditional settings and hospital settings, because I want to make sure that you're helped and you understand this. Genetics is complex. So, you know, I try to give as much information and clarity to you as possible. So I really took, you know, I really took what I learned at the hospital that I saw that we needed more of and what patients were asking for, and incorporated that in my practice. So I would say, you know, there's obviously differences with that and traditional genetic testing and counseling.
Yay. So you're like a functional medicine genetic counselor.
Yes. Yeah. That's the goal. Bringing the world.
Amazing. Together. So how can people connect with you and find you if they're interested to learn more? Tell us all the things.
Yeah, so you can go to my website and book a discovery call. My website is goldengeneticshealth.com. You can also find me on Instagram at goldengeneticshealth. And from there, you know, reach out. You can tell me what you're looking for, and then we can always hop on a free discovery call to see if I can help you and support you.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Natalie. I'm so stoked. I want to do my whole genetic testing with you, so we'll chat offline about that. But this is awesome. And for anyone who's curious, wanting to have a family, wanting to, you know, understand their fertility, wanting to prevent illnesses and conditions from happening so that they can live a long, healthy life, I highly recommend reaching out to Natalie. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.